Welcome to the KMUD News. I'm your news director, April Lewis, and I'm glad to be with you for this broadcast. On this episode, we have stories on the future of Humboldt tourism, a bridge collapse in Mendocino, and a new citizen petition to ban Amazon's warehouse plans in McKinleyville using the November Humboldt election ballot. But up first, a rundown of some quick local headlines. This is KMUD News. Starting off with an announcement from CAL FIRE in Mendocino. The CAL FIRE Mendocino unit will be conducting a prescribed burn on the Howard Forest Headwaters property. This prescribed burn will treat approximately 100 acres of grasslands within oak woodlands, creating a mosaic of variously burned vegetation and islands of unburned habitat. Howard Forest is in the central portion of Mendocino County, along Highway 101, south of Willits and north of Ridgewood. Burning will begin on Monday, June 15th, and may continue through June 21st. Burning will start at approximately 8 a.m. and conclude at approximately 3 p.m. Also from CAL FIRE, with a recent increase in fire activity, higher temperatures, lower fuel moistures, and minimal precipitation in the forecast, the extreme threat of wildfire impacting life, property, or natural resources is observable. Thereby, with the authority vested by the Director of the Department of Forestry and Fire Protection, CAL FIRE hereby suspends, except within incorporated cities, the privileges of burning by permit and other uses of open fire in the geographic area described as all state responsibility area lands within Humboldt, Del Norte, and Western Trinity counties. Campfires within organized campgrounds or on private property that are otherwise permitted will be allowed if the campfire is maintained in such a manner as to prevent its spread to the wildland and other private property. State rangers or other authorized agents of the Director of Forestry and Fire Protection may issue restricted temporary burning permits whenever it can be shown that burning or use of open fire is essential for reasons of public health, safety, or welfare. A campfire permit can be obtained at local fire stations or online at preventwildfireca.org. In Eureka, last week, the City of Eureka and Caltrans celebrated the completion of Eureka's South Gateway sign with a small ribbon-cutting ceremony at the Herrick Avenue overpass. Due to the location's proximity to Highway 101, attendance was limited to staff and contractors who helped bring the project to life. Funded through Caltrans' Clean California program, the monument will create a welcoming entrance to Eureka while reflecting the community's character. The monument was designed by local architect Julian Berg with guidance from a subcommittee of the city's Design Review Committee, including Caroline Perez, Chuck Ellsworth, Lee Cunningham, and staff from both the City of Eureka and Caltrans. The design draws inspiration from Eureka's architectural heritage, incorporating elements from the Sequoia Park Zoo's entry gateways and the brickwork found throughout the city. Looking ahead, Eureka hopes to install a complimentary North Gateway monument sign when funding becomes available, creating a unified and welcoming sense of arrival at both ends of the city. And up next, our main stories. This is KMUD News. The Green Bridge near Covelo collapsed Friday night with a vehicle driving over it, KMUD News reports. On the night of Friday, June 12th, the Green Bridge near Covelo, also known as the Mill Creek Bridge on Hill Road, collapsed. A car was on the bridge at the time, which dramatically flipped over and landed on its roof. Thankfully, the driver reportedly only suffered minor injuries. However, this collapse brought about questions of public safety and the reliability of Mendocino's aging rural infrastructure. The bridge was already classified by Caltrans as failing, with a replacement in the planning stages, with construction set to begin in the near future. The new bridge will be two lanes instead of the single lane of the bridge that collapsed. It is currently scheduled for phased construction over the next 2 to 3 years. Potentially, a faster build process could happen with a less architecturally pleasing design than the original replacement, since the new bridge plan requires a prefabricated weathering steel pony truss. which requires lengthy lead time for construction. With Mendocino County already close to advertising for a contractor to complete the project, it is likely the original replacement plan will stay in place. We spoke with Director of Mendocino County Department of Transportation, Howard Daschle, to learn more about plans to replace the Green Bridge and what he knows about the collapse event.
Said that the new bridge is going to take approximately 2 to 3 years to complete due to architectural features. Do you think this event will result in any push to possibly move that schedule up? Or do you think residents will want to maintain a certain aesthetic and they'll be willing to wait for the new bridge?
Yes, well, actually, to change the design and get the approvals done, I'm actually arguing that may take longer, even though the construction of a standard concrete bridge, had we started with that, would have been faster. We went down this other path. We've gotten to the starting point for construction, and it just makes sense to just stay on course, I think, and do what we've already have approvals for.
And then also, thank you for sending the design of the new bridge. It was nice to see that that's going to be a two-way bridge as opposed to the one-way bridge that was previously there. You know, was the plan, construction plan, to keep the old bridge running while the new one was constructed, or was the plan always to have the detours in place to build the new bridge?
Always we were going to have detours in place. And that was actually discussed early on with the emergency service providers. And because the bridge was so limited weight-wise, you know, half of what a normal load would be, they really couldn't use it anyway for emergency equipment. So, you know, the thought of closing it, getting a good bridge when we were done, was agreed to from the beginning.
And then approximately how long do those detours take?
Well, the original thought was that we would get a contractor, successful bidder, and they would start on building the prefabricated bridge. The bridge has to be built by a steel supplier somewhere, and depends on the bidder that got the job, where that would be. And then while that was being built, we would do other work and leave the old bridge in place and then tear it down and try to install it in a year. With this event, what we will probably try to do is still hire that contractor as soon as we can, start having the new bridge prefabricated wherever the low bidder has, you know, submitted a successful fabricator that's approved and makes specification. And but now that the old bridge is down, we may even try to start to do some of the work. Obviously, first order of business is to remove and salvage the old bridge, but perhaps we can even get other work done if the weather permits. So we're going to try to move forward as quickly as we can.
Is there anything in your mind you wish the county had done differently to prevent this bridge collapse event from happening? And then, you know, secondary to that, are there other bridges in Mendocino County that have, you know, similar structural deficiencies potentially?
So that's an interesting question. I've had this job 21 years, and I think during my time I probably put in 19 bridges, not quite one a year. And believe it or not, we work through a system of scores, you know, for bridges. And this bridge was not the worst bridge I'd ever worked on in the county as far as condition. It is really rather surprising to me that this one went. We had done other bridges that were a higher priority in the past time I've been here. So I was frankly surprised.
What kind of investigation needs to happen to figure out exactly why this specific bridge went?
Well, you know, that is something that, from my standpoint, I'm not qualified to do. I wouldn't do such an investigation. I'm more focused on simply completing the project that we've been planning and putting a good up to current codes and standard bridge there. I think there's some sort of accident investigation that's done by the traffic divisions. You know, there was traffic involved in this. And that's really out of my realm. We never do those sorts of investigations. And frankly, without having an eyewitness or someone to even say what happened, it's hard for me to guess just looking at the remains.
Do you think there's anything the county should be doing to maybe speed up some of these bridge replacements, or are you comfortable with the current pace of work and replacement rate?
Well, you know, I'd always like to do more, but there are limitations. And you know, we compete on a statewide level, you know, for bridges in the bridge program. So they really do have a system of looking at bridge health and conditions. And I think we do pretty good to average about a bridge a year, not quite. If there was more money and we could do more, but I mean, it got 157 bridges in the county system. And you know, it seems like one of them is coming up in need of repair every year, so that the system seems to be working.
After our interview with Director of Mendocino County Department of Transportation, Howard Daschle, KMUD News wanted to check on exactly how long detours from one side to the other of the now collapsed Green Bridge will take. According to Google Maps, the detour lasts nearly 20 minutes via Hill Road and Dobie Lane. Residents and drivers in the area should expect this lengthy detour for at least the next 3 to 4 years, based on the current construction timeline. While this detour would have been necessary for a new bridge construction regardless, the Green Bridge collapsing lengthens the period when the detour will be necessary. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Humboldt County is reconsidering its methods of tourism promotion, and the influence of social media commentary was highlighted in a presentation. Daniel Mintz reports.
As a significant change in the way the tourism industry is supported kicks off, Humboldt County's Economic Development Director has highlighted a grassroots element, the role of residents who talk about the county in person and online. Peggy Murphy, the county's Director of Economic Development, described a new 5-year plan for advancing the tourism economy in a June 10th online presentation to the Community Economic Resilience Consortium. The way the county markets and supports tourism has been a shifting and sometimes contentious issue for years, with the county questioning whether it was getting enough bang for the buck in its funding and contracts with tourism organizations. That's brought the county to the point it's at now, launching a 5-year plan to reorganize the way tourism marketing is funded and governed. During the presentation's discussion phase, tourism marketing was framed in a more down-to-earth context. Greg Foster of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, the meeting's host, said, quote, "Word of mouth is really important," and Murphy said that it's increasingly done online.
We have a pretty big kind of PR issue with how we sell ourselves before people get here. And so the study also talks to the new kind of itinerary creation people are doing through AI use that, of course, scrubs the internet and finds recommendations. And we're seeing for our area that, you know, those Humboldt Reddit subthreads are not doing us any good, guys. Like, no. We need to be very considerate of what we put out there in the community about our community, because with the new way that people are doing their itinerary planning, you know, what we say about ourselves impacts how those itineraries get built.
When Foster encouraged support for the new paradigm, Murphy said it can be helped, quote, "even if it's writing a nice thing online about Humboldt County." That dynamic was discussed further in this exchange between Foster and Murphy.
This community has flaws like every other community. Absolutely. And I've probably driven, I don't know how many hundreds of small communities I've driven through in the Western U.S. when I travel. And man, we got it going on compared to a lot of those other places. So I think sometimes we're our own worst enemy. So knock it off. I know there's no one here, but you know, one of the things I like to do is go through threads. I don't do X, Facebook, Instagram, and just comment on other people's posts, especially if they're negative, and just comment and say, you know what, check this out. So I think if we all did that, we could have a real good impact.
We'll also add, though, that, you know, while we're talking about travel and tourism marketing, the way we market ourselves online or even this aspect also impacts our ability to do business attraction recruitment and employee attraction recruitment. And so I do think that especially for this group, we should be thinking about this as one cog in a bigger marketing message for the entire county.
Absolutely. Let's work on our self-esteem, folks, and talk good stuff about ourselves.
Murphy said the communication goal behind the new strategy is to unify the county's message about itself when it comes to attracting visitors.
So the future with what we're hoping with this strategy, and I believe is accomplishable, is a unified countywide strategy. That's the document we have that we're now putting into action. Transparent performance-based funding, clear oversight and reporting. We are using a destination stewardship model in this. In the strategy, not a destination marketing organization model. This is because of very consistent community input that we also need to be very conscious of our community, of what we do in terms of development or the increase of tourists into our area. And so really trying to make sure that we're not just forcing, you know, square pegs circle hole, but rather being really respectful to our community members and the community that we're all here because we love. And then finally, aligning our tourism regions so that they are promoting one another, saying the same things, and delivering the same message.
The new plan will be carried out through a contracted destination stewardship organization. A tourism advisory board will be formed to make funding recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. The economic stakes are high for tourism alone. Murphy said it's a, quote, major economic driver, generating about $508 million in annual visitor spending and providing more than 5,800 jobs. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A group of concerned Humboldt County residents are petitioning for an anti-Amazon warehouse initiative to be placed on the November Humboldt County ballot. KMUD News reports, Humboldt residents have repeatedly and in public forums expressed large-scale, almost universal dissatisfaction over Amazon's plans to build a warehouse distribution center in McKinleyville. Recently, a citizen group called Indivisible Trinidad released a citizen petition hoping to ban Amazon's project and others like it from Humboldt County's coastal zone. The petition aims to add a ballot measure to the November Humboldt County election that would limit warehouse construction in the Humboldt County coastal zone to 20,000 square feet or less. We spoke with the lead citizen for the petition, Debbie Harrison Rumberger, to learn more about how the movement to place an anti-Amazon initiative on November's ballot came about. I'd love to learn a little bit more about this petition. So starting off, if you could let our listeners know a bit more about the petition and the citizen group that's behind it.
I attended the Amazon Warehouse public meeting that the Humboldt County Planning Department had sponsored in April. And it was very, very concerning to see our community so frustrated and so upset and feeling that they had no voice in what was going to be taking place in their community. I believe I'm a certified planner. I'm a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners, and I've had extensive work in the planning arena. And I recognize that Humboldt County is in a very difficult situation because their land use maps allow the Amazon project to go forward, and there's really very little recourse for them in spite of the impacts that, could be felt throughout the county. So I started looking into ways to give the community a voice, to be able to be heard on this issue. And I sought a surgical approach to being able to protect our coastal region, and that would be by restricting warehouse development in the coastal zone to a maximum of 20,000 square feet. We know that Amazon's proposal is for over 40,000 square feet. So I have a good friend who's a constitutional attorney, and he reviewed it for me, and he cited that there were a couple of problems, one being that Humboldt County cannot on its own determine what can happen in the coastal zone. But what they can do is they can seek certification of an amendment that they pass. So I went to the California Coastal Zone and showed them the amendment to make sure that we weren't going out and spinning our wheels for nothing. And they seemed to give it a pass. They said that their general counsel had reviewed the language, and they did not see any red flags with that. So the amendment basically calls for limiting warehouse development within our coastal zone, which, for those who aren't familiar, it's approximately 1,000 yards from the mean high tide along our coastline inland. And that's an area that the Coastal Protection Act of 1976 had determined was appropriate for marine-dependent uses, recreation, and basically small-scale development intended to protect the coastal ecology and the importance of the coast in terms of the industries that are dependent on being actually very close to it. So some of the things that I think are important is for our public to know is that facilities under 20,000 square feet would remain permitted. Any marine-dependent operations are fully exempt.
So looking at, you know, those Amazon meetings, certainly the general public opinion you get out of that is incredible opposition to what Amazon is potentially planning. But my questions off this petition mostly have to do with that 20,000 square foot mark, because, you know, just as an example for listeners, a Costco stores is about averages about 142,000 square feet. So 20,000 square feet in the world of warehouses tends to be, you know, quite small. Why was it important to limit it down to that size? And will there be any uses in the future? Like, for example, if somebody wanted to create a local business, wanted to create like a cannabis production and distribution facility, which may exceed that 20,000 square foot mark, you know, why would that be not beneficial to put in that coastal zone? And why is that mark down at 20,000 square feet for this petition?
The intent is to protect the coastal zone as the Coastal Protection Act defined it to be. It's not a large area, cannabis production, and of course I know that's just an example, but any industrial activity is going to generate certain outputs, and some of that is pollution, some of that is increased vehicular traffic, some of that is, with Amazon, would be the air traffic. So the question becomes, is are non-marine dependent activities intended to be in the coastal zone? And my reading of the regulations is that they are not, unless it's marine related. And Amazon basically has no dependency on the marine environment in terms of its activity. It could be located anywhere. Because the coastal zone was defined as that 1,000 yards inland from mean high tide, was intended to protect that area for small, non-impactful uses and to preserve it for fishing and marine dependent activities, not necessarily for activities that could be sited anywhere in the county outside of the coastal zone.
And then the last question I have, where can folks go to learn more about your petition, or who can they contact to learn more?
I would love to hear from people. Right now, we're setting up committees of volunteers. We've got a tremendous number of people that are active throughout the Humboldt County area. So if people would email me their contact information, we will put them on the volunteer list, and then we will be organizing over the next couple of weeks. People into areas will be out contacting people, letting them know when we're going to be starting, where we're going to be going, seeing what part of the initiative they want to take part in. Anything from delivering petitions to local businesses that are interested in putting them out to attending some of the fun summer events throughout Humboldt County that draw a lot of our residents, or whatever capacity, answering phones, whatever anyone would like to do, we have a spot for you. So if they could email me at debbie.harrison.rumberger, and that's debbie.harrison, harrison.rumberger, rumberger, @gmail.com. I know it's a long name, but you'll know who's getting back to you.
KEMA News will report on this issue again if the anti-large warehouse petition makes its way to the November Humboldt County ballot. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. That's all for our news broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our rotation of broadcast engineers, Dennis Marr, Katie Phillips, Bianna Federico, Michael McCaskill, Larry Lashley, and Javier Rodriguez. Also thanks to our reporter for this broadcast, Daniel Mintz. KEMA News is online. You can find us on KEMA.org and now on streaming platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And download our stories and newscasts for offline listening. You can also follow us on social media at KEMA News, including Facebook and Instagram. Do you have issues important to you that deserve more attention? Other stories we're missing or that you're curious about? Give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kema.org. Redwood Community Radio Incorporated is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located in the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiat, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to the region. I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.